Here Be Monsters is a show that invites you to explore fear and the unknown.
I saw her face change. I saw her see where I'd pulled my hair out.
Psychological warfare was always considered kind of an oddity, something done by freaks.
On the count of three, we're literally going to step out of our body. Step out.
You can find Here Be Monsters now at kcrw.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I guess it's 24 years ago that Strictly Ballroom sort of blew up.
Don't say that, Elvis. Don't say that.
Okay, violence is going to be even quieter than it normally is on the show. But in the interim, since then, he has done, let's see now, Romeo and Juliet, Moulin Rouge, Australia, The Great Gatsby.
Yeah.
He's now come to television or to streaming devices near you with the series The Get Down. First of all, it's always a pleasure to have you. Thanks so much for doing this.
Great, Elvis. It's great to be here.
And I guess the thing I've always been struck by for you is that there's always a generational schism in your work. I mean, and the parents almost always represent the past.
Yes.
I mean, they can't see forward. They almost always represent the past. I mean, thinking back to the parents, Paul Mercutio's parents, that the opening section of Strictly Ballroom, they look like they're from 30 years earlier,
right.
Like they haven't changed in 30 years. And I wonder for you where that comes from, the idea of generational things being the tensions.
It's very interesting you bring that up because it's both conscious and subconscious, I think. And I try not to be too self-conscious. Because if you make what I make, that would get you in a lot of trouble. But it's not just that those parents are generational split. They also specifically say there's only one way to cha-cha-cha. And it's in a rule book, and we wrote the rules. And it's in our rule book. Now, I don't know whether it's conscious or subconscious, but I do notice that not just in my work, but the work itself is always causing that reaction. I'm always facing a reaction where there's the incumbent kind of adult world, if you like, and I'm no kid anymore, but saying, you know, new steps, you're making up your own steps, you're stepping outside the rule book. And I don't know that I seek to do that, but there's no question. I can't deny that it's present, as you're suggesting, thematically, but also in the results of what I make. It's always the same kind of reaction. There's always a bit of, you know, don't go making up your own steps.
Yeah, but I just find it so interesting because, when I was watching the first episode of The Get Down and Giancarlo Esposito lays down the law, it could be a scene from almost anything you've done.
Correct. And you know what? I think you can almost cast all of my shows from the same cast. There's always, I mean, we joke about it, but there's always a Spanish grandmother. You know, like there is in Strictly Ballroom. I mean, there's one in Romeo and Juliet. You know, in Gatsby, you have a character not unlike that. I mean, am I attracted to that? Can I not release myself from telling that? Yes, I know if you were doing the biography of my own journey, I grew up in a small country town. I had a father who was very loving but extremely disciplined. He'd come from Vietnam. And he was also obsessed that we became exposed to or trained in many, many different things.
Yeah, he basically wanted you guys to be citizens of the world because you were in such a small place.
Right, yeah, we were the Renaissance players of Heron's Creek, you know. We were doing, like, painting, Shakespeare, and commando training, which I once said on a show like this, and everyone laughed, and I just thought, what are they laughing at? But I guess it is odd. But he was very much about the rules, and I distinctly remember getting involved as a young fellow, let's say, with a young woman, you know, having a kiss behind the, you know, whatever, and getting busted by the nuns, and dad saying something like, yeah, but it's the rules. And I said, well, to hell with those who made the rules, and him, you know, cracking a ruler over the back of my hand or something. And I think you're probably right. I think I probably always fundamentally had a thing about pushing the rules or stepping outside the granted construct. And I think that might have something to do with growing up in a very tiny place where you're going, like, I'm not going to accept. I never thought that I would stay in Heron's Creek. I can't think of a second when I ever thought that. I always thought I was going to take my own journey, you know, map out my own path. I always felt that.
Have you read much Aldous Huxley at all? Have you? Because I found myself thinking, even in the doors of perception, sort of like trying to push through. I mean, this seems to me that idea of understanding who you are in the dream state and in the waking world, which is so much a part of Huxley, is the way that your worlds kind of work. These characters almost seem to be dreaming at some point, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, I hear, you know, there's a lot of comment, and there's always been commentary that just doesn't get it. They go like, he's a madman. But there's also commentary that have gone, I used to not get it, now I kind of understand it. But beyond that, there's a sort of terminology out there which is kind of my particular brand of magical realism. Now, whether I think that's right or wrong, it's a reasonable way of describing that there's a duality in almost everything I do. I mean, in the Get Down, the adult world is fairly realistic. But clearly, in terms of the point of view of the youth, and this really came from working and collaborating with Flash and Rahim and, you know, Herc, they were all...
Oh, the fathers of hip-hop, basically.
Yeah, and I come from a community theatre background. I come from, you know, actually devising, it was called, in the theatre training I did. And in devising it, the one thing that they all revealed to me was, hey, don't do another outside looking in where the victims, because we saw ourselves, we didn't see negativity, we saw possibility. You know, they saw themselves as heroes. And I've been very buoyed to be reading some very deep thinking, well-written articles recently that put their hands up and say, why can't those characters from the South Bronx have their mythology? Why can't they, the Wild West has been mythologized, why can't we tell it as they felt it, as opposed to, you know, the factual, outside looking in kind of documentary industry, which is not necessarily true either.
No, that's just another point of view. But it's funny you say the Wild West, because so much of early hip-hop, because it came from the Jamaicans and Towson, comes from that.
Right, right.
I mean, that idea, so much Western slang made its way into hip-hop.
I mean, that's what's so, having lived in this world now for so long, had the privilege of working closely and collaborating closely with the Founding Fathers, with Crash and Dave. I mean, it's a long, long list, right? And, you know, what was really always amazing to me, when I show my son what the gangs, he thinks that's Mad Max. He thinks, oh, they copied Mad Max. I said, no, Will, who's 10, I said, I'm guessing that George, when he was looking at an apocalyptic world, he made it in the 70s. I bet George went, Jay, look at New York. I mean, these are kids who are dressing like hardcore bikers. They're not running around on Harley Davidsons.
They run bikes or skateboards.
You know, right. So they're mythologizing themselves. And this idea of them taking on the Wild, Wild West, we will be cowboys, they're mashing it up. And then at some point it transfers into, instead of just violence, it transfers into battles in dance. And then it transfers into the use of music instead of a gun or a spray can. So, you know, this is, I didn't make this up. You know,
because there were DJ battles. I mean, the DJs would go back and forth.
Absolutely there were DJ battles. And they weren't doing it for money or fame. They were doing it to battle,
well,
to win.
There was no money in those days.
To be heroes. They were doing it to be heroes. I mean, there's that beautiful line in Style Wars, not Star Wars, but Style Wars, which is about the graph.
Yes, we know the documentary Star Wars. Yes. I'm a black guy. I know this. thank you, Rest. Tell me more about this hip-hop or what you
speak. You'd be surprised how many people think I say, because of my accent, they think I say Star Wars, which also opened in 77, okay? But, you know, there's that beautiful line where that kid says, you know, the mum's going, oh, well, he thinks he's invincible. It's dangerous down there. And he goes, I'm not doing it for that reason. Mum, well, why are you doing it? He says, because when something like, and obviously I'll be, you know, rewriting this, but when I see my name up there, I am someone. That's why they're doing it.
It really, in its way, was like the Wild West, wasn't it?
I think it was. I mean, I think, and interestingly, out of any period of time or any landscape that is kind of wild, I mean, that song Wild in the Streets, which we use, they tend to be fertile grounds also for pure creativity, pure invention, you know? The immense use of the imagination, sometimes for good and sometimes not for good. You know, in the case of what then became known as hip-hop, it was for good. And I love the way, I think it was Seth who said, he grew up, he's one of our writers, you know. He grows up actually with Basquiat.
And a playwright, I know Seth's work.
Brilliant. And he said, you know, we used to kind of give each other names and put on characters to protect ourselves against the negativity around us. You know, we wanted to make ourselves superheroes. And he was the one that really pushed that idea. I mean, he was the one that came up with the name Shaolin Fantastic, Lady Killed and Romantic.
It's a treat. I'm being educated about the difference between Style Wars and Star Wars by my guest,
sorry,
Baz
Luhrmann. Sorry, Elvis. I blew that. But, I mean, you know, honestly, very smart people, not everyone's aware of that documentary. It's seminal. But a lot of people do not, you know.
Well, I guess I just find myself thinking, too, and as I was watching that first episode that you directed, in so many visual terms, I find myself going back to, in my head a lot, going back to Strictly Ballroom. I mean, that leap reminded me of that flip that Paul does in that beginning dance. We just, everybody's, what are you doing? And just sort of breaking with tradition in order of saying the rules, almost saying that the rules of physics don't apply to me.
Particularly when it comes to art and creativity. I mean, I think that's true in so many things. You can apply it to politics, to anything. But I think when it comes to creativity and art, the idea that someone has a book and written it is that this is how you do the cha-cha-cha, fundamentally, and I'm using that as a metaphor, fundamentally there's something corrupt about that, that ultimately creativity has to leap beyond the rules. You know, you need to learn the rules to break them. But, you know, it's funny with my work. I often think if I was asked to draw, like, you know, if Toulouse-Lautrec once was dragged into a madhouse because they thought his paintings were mad. And he was pretty out there. But to get out, he had to just draw. And so he did some beautiful sketches of circuses, and they were realist. Anyone were like, maybe he's not mad. So it's not like I don't know how to draw, meaning I do know how to do, you know, a wide shot and two overs. I can do that, right? But
and look at you rolling your eyes once as you say it. You're bored just saying those words out loud.
Well, it's sometimes I just think, oh, should just stick more to the, but I feel like.
Really? Do you actually ever have that thought? You say, I should actually do
this? Because it's exhausting. Sometimes I think maybe that would just be easier. And someone said to me the other day, why do you always pick the hardest road? And I go, well, when I think of it, it doesn't seem hard. I always think this is the easy one. You know, this is
what you're going to do more likely.
Oh, exactly. Well, this has got to be done. It was like the Get Down. In no way, I started 10 years ago with a question. How did such a pure form of creativity get born in the modern era? Just by seeing a photograph, being aware of it. And the more I peel back the layers, the more I learned. What I learned is what Flash will tell you, which is everyone wants to know about the cake, the 80s, but no one realized what was going on in the birth period, the 70s. And I just began collaborating more and more, getting more and more involved and saying, well, how can I help this get made? And ultimately, I had to confront the moment of saying, well, if I don't do it, it won't get done.
So you really weren't going to get in. You're just going to be like in a supervisory capacity.
Well, that's what the thing about the whole new form, and I don't think it's called television, what Netflix offers is that you can provide vision and then a whole lot of other creatives captain it. But it requires what they call a showrunner. And honestly, there is no precedent. It's not a genre piece. It's not a police show. So there's no precedent for how you make a music-driven show that is about music using music. That's just one aspect.
But also a music-driven piece that's about social realism.
And yes to that. And that's also really about New York City. Like, it's the sheer throw of the piece. Like, it's, you know, its breadth. Like, it really is epic, you know? So there's no, it doesn't fit into a box. So when, to get something that doesn't fit in the box made, to get it funded, to captain it, I had to be involved in making up the process with everyone else. And I'm used to that in terms of devising things, but I had to be involved in it.
We'll take a break and I'll learn more about Style Wars from my guest, Baz Luhrmann, his new project on Netflix.
There's a show called Style Wars.
Tell me about style. Yeah, this is a treatment. No style here. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Listen to the Rhythm Planet podcast to explore music from all corners of the globe. Brazilian, European, African, and tropical Latin. Rhythm Planet is a state of mind. Listen at kcrw.com/rhythmplanet or on KCRW's app.
Welcome back. It's The Education of Elvis Mitchell by my guest, Baz Luhrmann.
So did you enjoy watching Star Wars?
You know what? It's so revelatory. All those people in that place, that was incredible. And just seeing R2-D2 there, too, it's just amazing. His newest project for Netflix is The Get Down. And one of the things you were saying, which is one of the reasons you've made as many films as people like, is that you can't make something unless you invest yourself in it, can you? I mean, we go back to, you've done Strictly Ballroom, we've been a play. Yeah. And clearly, there have been the influence of Romeo and Juliet on that, which leads to Romeo and Juliet. When I met you, talking about Moulin Rouge, that's been in your head forever. In Australia, there's a lifetime of work.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing for this. You said 10 years.
Yeah, it's true. It is true. I now accept it. I've tried to do, because it's so attractive. They say, can you just do a little bit of your thing and not 110%? And it isn't a choice. I just can't not give everything to it. Once the train has left the station, is all my life, and it consumes all my life, and it's quite costly, particularly on the personal side of things. But I just feel that I can't not do that. Because also what I'm doing usually is not, like, you think about trying to reinvent the modern musical or ask the question, if Shakespeare were making a movie, how might he go about that? You know, these are not genre formulas. So by the very nature, and I'm also involved in every aspect from the, I mean, it's curious with The Get Down. Sometimes people say, he's an odd choice. Well, I wasn't chosen for The Get Down. I was trying to answer a question and it became my life experience. You know?
But why would people say you were not a choice? Why would you be an
well,
choice?
Well, I think there's a naive perception out there that somehow every director is hired. I'm never hired. I mean, I never get hired. I am in the fortunate position to be able to think something up and generally get it made.
Has there been a work-for-hire project that you ever came close to doing and then something just kept you from doing it?
Well, my agent and dear friend always says, why didn't you take Harry Potter when you were offered it the first time?
You offered Harry Potter.
Well, it came my way. I mean, occasionally, and it was on the cover of Time magazine, and I said, Robert, I'm trying to reinvent the modern musical. Someone else will do that brilliantly, you know? And they did, and I thought the pictures are beautifully made, but I wish it would happen. I really do. I wish it would happen because I wouldn't have to have the vision. I wouldn't have to spend all the time convincing, cajoling. I wouldn't have to write the text. I could just direct. And that could be refreshing.
But this also begs the question, could you do something that you didn't write? I mean, that's really what, for me, this is about. Could you do something that you didn't create?
Well, I didn't write this project. I wrote with, I mean, I collaborated with brilliant writers. I mean, Stephen Adley Gurgis, you know, does have a Pulitzer Prize. I mean, Nelson George knows a thing or two about hip-hop, you know. Art Thomas, by the way, who came from a gang culture, who was swept up into a very smart education, who is a professor at USC. You know, I was privileged to be surrounded by such a diverse and gifted group of writers. And I have a younger guy called Sam and Jackie, and they run the team. And we've developed this unusual, but it works way of doing this. And also, so much of it is music. So one of the writers is Nas. And if you look around, others have had stories like that. There's no question. That's why it was important in a way in the end that, I mean, Nas writes it as narration. But it was important that David Diggs, who plays that character, that it wasn't Nas playing the character. You had to say it's a mythical character. It's how we have, you know, factual characters like Flash that are very accurately rooted in fact. And then we have these mythical characters that weave amongst all of them so that we can visit all these characters. Otherwise, I did contemplate at one stage just going, well, what if I did a biography, say Flash's bio, which should be done one day because he's got a great story. But it becomes just, it does become someone's story as opposed to the city of New York, really, which is what I most want to do.
Couldn't you say Romeo and Juliet is someone's story or The Great Gatsby is someone's story? You couldn't say that about those two?
Well, no, because for example, Fitzgerald was brilliant at this. Like, there are historical references in all of those books, but both he and Shakespeare riffed and mashed them up. For example, I did so much research and I worked with such very heavy, high-ended academics on Gatsby, and I can tell you from aerial photographs in the 20s that the gas station location, which is oddly enough where one of our scenes we've shot, you know, out there where the World Fair was? Right in that globe, that's where the gas station was. But Fitzgerald put it in another location, and the reason he did that was he knew these people. So he was borrowing from people he knew. There isn't one house that is the mansion. There isn't one person. He borrows and he makes alloys of characters and alloys of locations, and so does Shakespeare. So, you know, we had to have that freedom. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to tell such an expansive story. You know, how do you, if you're dealing with Flash's journey, how do you get into the Twin Towers politics, for example, you know?
It's the treatment. We're talking metallurgy with my guest, Baz Luhrmann. His new project for Netflix is The Get Down. I guess one of the other things, too, that really comes across in your work is that your male characters tend to be kind of unformed. They have ambition, but they're not pointed towards something yet. Yeah. And the women have very specific ideas about what they want from the world.
Yeah.
And is that autobiographical for you as well?
I certainly know. I have surrounded myself with very strong women. You know, my DP on Australia is glamorous, but really strong. My wife is glamorous, but really strong. And, you know, there's no, there might be a bit of a mythology around outside of our circles that no one tells me things as they are, but I'm surrounded by a lot of people, a lot of them women, who tell me just as it is.
But the idea that women represent a kind of an experience that the guys don't have, I mean, Moulin Rouge, certainly Romeo and Juliet, there's an idea of the women being sort of grounded in the way that the male characters aren't.
I know exactly what you mean. There's a kind of naivete to the boys. And the women, I mean, Shakespeare didn't write Romeo and Juliet either. You know, he took the story from a John Brown poem. It's Pyramus and Thisbe and so on and so forth. But the fundamentals of that is that, and this is why it was so hard to cast, is that Romeo is a youthful dreamer. He really truly is the embodiment of a young man. But Juliet is wise beyond her years. I mean, she's so modern and so mature. So, you know, I think, yeah, why am I attracted to that pattern? I don't know. You'd have to put me on the couch, doctor, and spend more time getting to the bottom of that.
Not enough time for that. But I just find that to be, and this really feels like it's almost in its way kind of a reduction of so much of the things you've done in the past.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like all roads led you to the Get Down.
It is true that you will find, and I don't deny that, elements of all those pieces in this show. It's also true that I didn't really set out to do that. It's almost like I am compelled towards those themes, or that in working with everyone as I did, what was very interesting was my job was to find both a realist and a mythic structure to bring, to convey this work to the broadest possible audience. I'll tell you something someone read to me, and there's been, of course, so much written about the show, but someone very smartly said something like, you know, because my son is a great fan of, you know, DC Comics, MC, you know, and all the shows. You know, they are the number one genre in our world. They are the Greek mythologies of our time, and they have the widest possible audiences. And it said, you don't realize it, but you've already seen Netflix's newest hero, comic book hero show. It just doesn't have DC or
Marvel.
You know, Marvel written on the end of it. And he said, I urge all fanboys of Star Wars and to go out and see. And he wasn't being negative. He was being positive. And I was thrilled. I could tell my 10-year-old, look, even some guys that you know are going to see Star Wars want to see this. But I think it was very important because it was very true that the way those kids saw themselves were as heroes, and they made themselves into superheroes with music and paint and movement. So my job was to find a construct to do that. So I did. I tend to go to primary mythological structures, and all the other shows I've been made are made from underlying primary myths. You can identify those. If you know anything about Campbell, it's pretty easy to do.
Yeah, but that hero's journey, though, is,
yeah.
As we're talking about this, so there's almost always a moment in your pieces where a moment feels like it's about to break out into physical violence and it turns into dance.
Yeah.
That idea of physical tension and how is it going to, it's going to release itself.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. It was, and I don't want to get too much into the comments, you know, because of the comments I care about is what you actually hear the audience saying, you know, and the way it's been embraced. I mean, we've had one thing we do know is it's been embraced. It's in the culture. But every now and then I see you hear a headline, it's West Side Story set in the Bronx. And I'm a bit like, well, what's wrong with West Side Story? You know, like in the sense that there's another period of time when, you know, here is violence, but it gets expressed through dance. The only thing that's the twist in the Bronx is that it really happened. I mean, as Bam would say, it wasn't like he went, okay, everybody dance now, and they danced, right? But by osmosis and over a period of time, rumbles, as Herc says in our show, turn into DJ rumbles. And I'm all right with that.
Clearly you are. My guest, by the way, his good friend Bam, would be Afrika Bambaataa, is, of course, Baz Luhrmann. We're talking about The Get Down, which is on Netflix now. It's The Treatment. This is the point where I get to ask you to tell the audience what The Get Down is.
Well, The Get Down itself, the word, what it specifically is, I mean, hip-hop's not called hip-hop until like 80, roughly speaking. So it's got another 3 years. They haven't named it. But as Nelson George would tell you, because he's much more articulate about this than I am, and the person who's the most articulate, of course, is Flash, is that in any given record, there were beats in there, and there's what they call the whack part, which is the singing and all that other stuff.
You're waiting for the bridge.
Right. And the B-boys, or the B-boys, used to dance to the beats. And the whole idea was, how could we keep the beat just going and not have the singing? This was the first sample. right? So the get down was the groove. But very quickly this word, they'd say, oh, that's the get down bit because you get down to it. But very quickly this word went on to mean things like sex. It meant it's cool, it's great, it's, you know, fly, you know.
So or also a fight.
It was very elastic, yes. You know, you want to get down? And there's a lyric in one of our songs, you got to get down to get up. So it's very elastic, you know, in a good way. And I think, by the way, someone very bright the other day said, why do you think disco crashed and, you know, punk has its influences and does go on, but that hip-hop became so pervasive? And my only observation there is, one, hip-hop has multiple strands. It's the music, it's the poetry, it's the beats, it's the poetry, it's the art, it's the attitude, it's the movement. But also, the very nature of the form, it's so elastic, it's so constantly transforming, you know? And some people can be critical of what is called contemporary hip-hop now and so on and so forth, but it evolves. And that's why the English language, as opposed to other languages, has become dominant too, because it absorbs other languages and it evolves. So anything that's prepared to cross-fertilize actually gets stronger.
Also, the idea of the energy of youth versus the institutional setting.
Yeah.
Of older people. Basically, these are people who put down roots versus people who haven't had a chance to find their roots yet. I mean, that's really, again, we look at all these pieces you've done.
Yeah.
It's really a big part of this too, isn't it?
It's somehow, I cannot escape it. And maybe it's because of us. I honestly, even though part of me just goes, look, it's time to just disappear. Because it's because
Well,
because the work is so absorbing. Like there are, you know, I have children, and you know, at some point Shakespeare just sort of retired on a farm and, you know, disappeared. But there's another part of me that feels like I haven't even got going. I've done nothing. Like I look at what constitutes being 50, and I just don't feel like that. So I feel like somehow I haven't been able to let go of this thing about youth versus the incumbent. But you know what I think is true, more importantly, there are a lot of young people who are even in hip-hop who didn't know about that time. And I think to hear Flash or Nas or Herc say younger people are now going, really? I didn't understand that. I think that makes the whole journey worthwhile.
Oh, sure. But I guess maybe one of the reasons you might have heard that people said, why you, is,
yeah,
you know, they're just,
I understand that.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. A lot of people think, well, why is another white guy doing this?
Yeah, believe you me, I didn't set out to be that guy. And I'm not even American, even though I live in New York.
I would never guess between Star Wars and Style Wars that you weren't American.
Well, I mean,
you give yourself away on that one at all.
Two great American iconic films that you could mash up. And in fact, I think I might have had a good go at it. But it's, you know what? I'm not French either. And yet I burrowed into Moulin Rouge. I'm not American. And Gatsby would have to be one of the primary texts of the American psyche, if not the primary text. Why would I go and get amongst that hornet's nest? It's not like I don't have choices, you know? I do. And I think it's a good question. I have often gone, oh, really? You know, but there just came a point where I contemplated it and I talked with everyone and I just felt it was the right thing to do. And in my world, with all the collaborators, they're a bit like, you're not going to abandon us, are you? Or not continue with the show when things got tough, you know? And I just didn't feel I could do that.
Well, Tom, you're welcome to come back here anytime you want. It's been a long time.
I always feel comfortable to chat.
Well, thank you so much. My guest.
And check out that film, Style Wars.
I'm writing this down.
Style Wars.
I'm writing this down. My guest was educating me about everything. '70s is Baz Luhrmann. His newest project with Netflix is, of course, The Get Down. Recording engineer here at NPR in New York is Jeannie Montalvo-Lucar. The show is mixed by Kat Yore. It is edited by Blake Veit, who's the associate producer. I have no style. It's The Treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.